I'm sure most of you know that there is no more agonizing feeling than loneliness. Loneliness is an insidious demon that can darken the doors of life's dreams and shut the soul off from its solace. Yet there is no need to suffer loneliness, nor is there any need for you to suffer it in the future. For loneliness can be whipped. And that's simply because loneliness is not a condition, it's a state of mind. And you can change your mind. So whether your loneliness stems from looking for a relationship that doesn't exist, or looking for fulfillment within a relationship that does exist, either is the same, though the techniques are slightly different. You can change your mind and thus eliminate the loneliness from your life. But I can hear some of you say in your hearts, it's not just in my mind that I don't have a husband or a wife, that I don't have warm, loving friends, that I stay home night after night because I have no companions, no real avenues open to find them. And it's not just in my mind that people have let me down and cheated me and spurned me. It's not in my mind that my parents kicked me out and that the persons to whom I'm attracted just can't stand me. I can hear that in your hearts. And yet, even hearing it, I can say to you with absolute assurance that that condition or conditions that you feel are not real. They are merely the effect, the result of your state of mind. Now let me put it bluntly, so we can get the issue out into the open. If you suffer from loneliness, you're not lonely because you lack someone to keep you company. You feel lonely in spite of those who would or do keep you company. And the reason why you reject it is because you've somehow gotten the ignorant opinion that you're not worth it, that you're a nobody. And that's the farthest thing in the world from the truth. For my friend, when you discover and come to know that you are somebody, and you truly are somebody, and you truly are worthy, then you'll never be lonely again. And that's our purpose here. It's to break the old tape of loneliness in your life. Think about that. Never be lonely again. You know, you don't have to be a hermit to suffer from loneliness. The lonely person can stand in a crowd and feel alone, can be the head of a large corporation and be lonely, tend to the needs of a loving family and be lonely. The lonely ones are somehow not touched by anyone, largely because they build high fences around their lives and out of fear of rejection, guilt, or other ignorance, refuse to allow themselves to be touched. They misread the extended hand of friendship as a threat. They receive words of praise as if it were a body blow, for they think the words are insincere. They read outgoingness in another as aggressiveness for which they must raise a defense. Out of the hope of others, they find despair for themselves. Loneliness is a state of mind arising out of not yet discovering your true self, your true worth, your true capability. For when you do, the loneliness disappears. Now, am I saying that you're going to become so esoteric and self-satisfied that you won't want companionship, you won't want a good marriage and friends? Of course not. All that's going to happen is that the character of your desire is going to change. Your desire for companionship, when you know that you're a worthy person, is for sharing. But the desire for companionship when you think you're a nobody is an infantile cry of dependency. I need you. I can't live without you. It is an independent choice that allows you to really enjoy people for what they have to freely offer, rather than that which you feel you have to draw from them. It's an independent choice that allows you to select for deeper relationships those special people who vitalize your activities and complement your goals, rather than just having to accept anyone who put up with the drain that you put upon them. What I'm saying is that your sense of well-being and security is as great as your realization of who you truly are. Of course, along with knowing who you are, you must also practice being who you are. You know, that's really the business in your life, to demonstrate your abilities, to exercise your strength, and to gain understanding. And when you make this practice, and it comes from truth, all kinds of people are going to be drawn to you, and from them in love, you can select your close associates, your personal friends, your mate. But first, let's go back and focus on who you really are, who you truly, truly are. Imelda Shanklin, in her book, What Are You?, reminds us, you are a soul that has forgotten its divine identity. A soul now struggling to remember that you are the living son of the living God. Spiritually, you're an idea in the mind of God. And that idea must be given expression in you. You're a son of God, but not always have you acted the part. Your consciousness is your life. Your knowledge or perception of objects, states, or sensations is the world in which you live. You're encompassed by what you see physically and mentally. You live in a small, mean world if your perceptions are small, mean. You live in a large, generous world if your perceptions are large, generous. Your mental realm is as definite as your physical realm. You live in your consciousness, unquote. Again, I hear the murmurs of argument from the lonely. They say, yes, I may be a child of God and all that, but that doesn't make anyone like me. Why should they? My nose is so big. My legs are so long. I have this physical impairment. I have this mental impairment. I'm ugly. The theme of the friendless is, no one could like or love me because. Well, my friend, let me make it clear. There are people with bigger noses, longer legs, worse physical and mental impairments than you, and yet they have scads of wonderful friends, and they never know a moment of loneliness. And it's high time that we quit making excuses, stop blaming effects, and get down to the business of expressing our higher self. There's really no mystery about how to go about it. It all goes back to a simple rule: give what you want. That's right. What you give, you have. Or to turn it around, the only things you can truly possess are those that you give away. Now, the truth of this is not always apparent to you, but the successful free giver is a victorious, liberated liver. And assuming, of course, what you're giving is what somebody else wants, is there a market for what you're giving? You know, the whole key to your loneliness may be right in this. You may be giving trash. As a matter of fact, the lonely person is very often that way because of what they give. They give rejection instead of attraction. There's a little test you can take for yourself. Ask yourself these questions. Do you practice rejection or attraction? Griping or uplifting words? Despair or hope? Hate or love? Malicious gossip or encouragement? Envy or congratulations? Nagging or praising? Mad looks or warm smiles? Flattery or sincerity? Disdain or approval? Do you practice defensiveness or outgoingness? Do you give insults instead of consideration? Well, for example, if you practice rejection attitudes, you know, of course, that you can change to an attraction attitude. You can make that what they call transaction. And the technique is to find a channel of transference and some way to dissolve the resistance that keeps you from making the transfer. Now that involves recognizing down deep that you've got a desire to make that transference of your rejection feelings, words, and actions to someone or something who will understand their true intent and help you to overcome them. And it also involves recognizing that we desire to dissolve any tendency to resist the changes in ourself that make that overcoming a permanent part of us. And that's where our inner work comes in. That's where Christianity becomes the key to getting rid of your loneliness. Leslie Weatherhead, in his book, The Transforming Friendship, said, quote, "Christianity began in a vivid, tremendous, transforming experience of the friendship of Jesus. It could never have continued unless the friendship had been sustained, unless those who had never seen him could yet enter into the fellowship and become sure of him also." Unquote. What that's saying is that the spirit and personality of the Christ, of Jesus, is with us today to be our friends. Now, above all else, and whatever else you may think, it is clear that Jesus was a friend to everyone. Now, that he didn't commend what everyone did, but as a true friend, he forgave each person for whatever they did or were. So, my lonely friend, it's time for you to begin to use your imaging faculty to rid yourself of your rejection attitudes. And the image is the image of Jesus or some other tried and trusted friend as being your companion. With that companion, you're never lonely. Now, personally, I choose Jesus because Jesus is my example. It was Jesus who said, "Be of good cheer." And he said it when things looked their darkest. You recall in the book of Matthew, there was a paralytic that was brought to Jesus. Now, that paralytic may have had some hope, but he had no movement. He could not move. He had absolute nothing to cheer about. But Jesus said to him, "Be of good cheer, my son. Your sins are forgiven." And then a moment later he said, "Rise, take up your bed and go home." And the man did. Then that man knew he had something to cheer about. But the difference between that man and Jesus was that Jesus knew all the time that he had something to cheer about. So why not you yourself know what Jesus knew? Why are you waiting for somebody to push you, to tell you to rise and take up your bed? Why are you waiting? Open your eyes and go forth. And as you go forth, find someone who is bombarding you with hate or disdain or insult. And with your companion Jesus or that trusted friend with you, take what they give to you. But don't take it in the way that they give it to you. Take it and dissolve your own habitual rejection and find some way within you to turn their hate to your love, their disdain to your approval, their insult to your considerateness. And then give it back to them. But give it back to them as love, approval, and considerateness. And give it without any kind of demand or expectation of positive response on their part. Remember, their fence is very high and very thick, just as yours were. So bless them. And as you bless them, you bless yourself. And you've broken the tape of loneliness. You have your companion, but you have more companions as well, because in so doing you have become attractive. You have come to know who you truly are. You are demonstrating your abilities. You are exercising your strengths. You are gaining understanding. But again, I hear the heart murmurs of those who know great loneliness and yet have relationships. And in fact, it is the problems involved in those relationships that create the lonely emotions, the sense of separation and loss. That's not at all unusual. Very often there is loneliness in relationships. As a matter of fact, I've never met one person who has had a perfect relationship with everyone in their lives. In fact, most people who come to talk to me do it because they have what appears to them to be a serious challenge in their life as it relates to another person or persons. And one of the biggest businesses that exists is the business of helping people solve their relationship problems. Psychiatry, psychology, counselors, social workers, pastors, lawyers, judges, all of these exist because people have problems with other people that they feel they cannot resolve themselves. In the first place, that ought to be a relief to all of us to know that we're not alone in our relationship frustrations, for most of us have challenges ongoing in current relationships. We have problems establishing new desired relationships. We sometimes stumble in our attempts to expand a relationship we'd very much like to have broadened. And we sometimes get in hot water trying to keep existing intimate relationships vital and strong. And I suspect that you, like me, have sometimes asked yourself the question, why do these problems exist? After all, on the surface, it seems to be the most straightforward thing in the world to have happy, fulfilling relationships. Let's take, for example, the marriage relationship. Remember the scenario that you probably had of marriage when you were very romantic? Probably went something like this. A person is noticed who offers an attraction to the emotional or feeling nature. An introduction is arranged. A delightful period is spent discovering a wide area of common interests and those which should be shared with others or dropped altogether. Investigation into family and background reveals no reason why the relationship should not become more intimate. Discreet advances are made to determine the extent and nature of physical needs and limit. And now, being thoroughly in love and compatible sexually, socially, and mentally, a marriage takes place, and then two adults enjoy a wonderful, warm, understanding relationship till death do them part. That's the way it was, wasn't it? That's the way it really is. You realize that's the plot of thousands, perhaps millions, of romantic novels and short stories? Just for fun. Every one of you that's lived that romantic relationship as I described it, will you please stand? Well, I don't blame you. I wouldn't stand up and be called a liar either. So why isn't it like that? What keeps your relationship from being smooth and happy and fulfilling? Well, to find the answers, we have to start where finding answers always starts. Starts right now, right here, with ourselves. Now, that's true. Every relationship you have starts with you. Not only that, but whether or not it is a good relationship depends rather heavily on your input into that relationship. It's even possible that it depends entirely upon you. Can you conceive of a relationship in which you do not play a part? Think about that. Therefore, the quality of that relationship must depend upon your input, and the quality of your input depends upon your own sense of self-esteem. Now, some basic questions about self-esteem can help us determine the starting place. Ask yourself, do you feel worthy of good relationships? If not, then you need to work on gaining a sense of value about yourself. Do you enter into relationships from a position of strength? If not, then you need to find the ways to overcome being a victim in life. And we'll talk about that. Are you equal within your relationships? If not, you need to know that you are equal in your relations. Do you enter relationships with the idea of gaining the upper hand? If so, what you need to know most of all is that ego cannot bring about happiness. Do you terminate relationships because you don't get the response you think you deserve? Well, if that's true, then you need to find the true meaning of response, and we're going to talk about that. But most of all, if your relationships tend to make you think or feel less of yourself, then you need to learn that you can change that feeling without ever having to change anyone else besides yourself. You see, you're the key to every one of your relationships. And you supply the power for them. As a matter of fact, from your personal observational point of view, we can say you alone are the relationships. The people and the circumstances are merely effects reflecting your inner self-esteem, inner consciousness. Look at it this way with me. How can there be love in a relationship if you don't supply it. Uh-uh. Now, wait a minute, friend. Think about it. The love you truly feel is the love you give. The love you truly feel is the love you give. How many times have you thought someone was loving you or was withholding love from you only to find out that you'd been wrong about it? And at that point, if it was that you thought they were loving you and found out that that wasn't right, you began to feel unloved, didn't you? You know why you began to feel unloved? It was not because of their failure to love you. It was because you had ceased to express love to that person. It wasn't because of what they did or didn't do. You don't feel the love of another. The only love you feel or experience is the love you express. Now, I'm not taking away the love relationship. We are joyous in the consciousness of the love another gives. We see their joy and we feel their caress and we really like that. But it is our own love that we are expressing that we truly experience. Now, lest you think I'm straining at gnats or just plain off my rocker, let me tell you why it's important for you to know this. It is the basis for your happiness, success and harmony in life. It's the way to end the loneliness that you have in relationships of all kinds. Simply put, anyone can appear to change toward you. And if you happen to be dependent upon their caress or some outer sign, then you're a slave to them. You see, you have to serve that person. You have to work to do what that person wants you to do so that you can get what you want from them. Just so that you won't be left barren and unloved. Dependency on another person for love or any emotional reaction simply makes you a victim. You're no longer in control of your life. You are subject to being used, manipulated, emotionally starved, and overstimulated. So if you're that kind of victim, I want you to know right now that all of that can change in every area of your life. You can establish real, wholesome relationships without becoming a victim or without making anyone your victim. Choose to base every relationship you have on the solid ground of the unrelenting giving of your love. First thing you need to do is to give up any notion that relationships are 50-50 propositions. They're not. In most 50-50 relationships, there is so much hassle and so much trouble as one party and then the other is trying to judge where their 50% ends and the other 50% begins. It just simply does not work. So give in to the real law of harmony. That law states, give all your love into every relationship all the time. Give all your love into every relationship all the time. Now, please understand, we're not talking so much about choosing whether or not you're going to do a particular thing or act in some specific way. This law is attitudinal or inner rather than activity-centered on the outer. The key is to choose and then follow through in a given situation with individuals when your choice is truly made as an expression of your own love. Now, this idea of giving your love unrelentingly is fantastically freeing. Think of it. When you're giving your love without any limit or reservation, you don't have time to worry about whether a person is making the proper response. You know through the actual experience in your own body, in your own mind, in your own soul, that your joy is full in your gift. Now, if their reaction is negative or passive, only they feel the hurt and emptiness. You still have the joy of the giving of the love. And if their reaction is positive, you have the joy of sharing their enjoyment and happiness. Realize that you no longer have to resist any activity that others commit. Think of that. You cannot be a victim if you don't resist. Now, isn't that a wonderful thought? To be able to live free of victimizing effects. And I know there's not one of you who wants to be dominated or pushed around or to be made to sacrifice unnecessarily. We don't want that. Because in that attitude, we ourselves become anxious and fearful, guilty, hurt, depressed, self-abased. What we really want is freedom from others' control. Yet many are unwilling to buy that freedom at anything like a fair market value. Somehow those folks feel that the only price they have to pay is to sit around and complain and mope because somebody didn't give them love or that somebody took their love from them. Strange phenomena that you may have noticed. Have you ever seen how sometimes people get angry with their parents or their mate when that parent or mate dies? I mean, they get angry at them. They get angry at them because that parent or mate took their love away by dying. And the one that's living was dependent on that love, an outside source for their love. And thus, they had entered into a victimizing relationship to get that love. And so death has taken away whatever love they knew. And it's a terrible loss. Think of it this way. If you believe that any person gives you love, freedom, or harmony, you are yourself beholden to that person, and you are the victim if they choose to make you so. Conversely, if you believe that any person can take your freedom from you, can strip you of your love, then again, you are their slave. You're their victim. And you might also note that if you believe that entering a relationship requires that you relinquish some of your own freedom or reduce the love you have for others just so you can coexist in harmony with the parties of that relationship, to believe that is to rob yourself, to make you the victim of yourself. You can be free to give unreservedly of all the love you have in every circumstance to every person. Dr. Wayne Dyer, in his book Pulling Your Own Strings, says that the freest people in the world are those who have senses of inner peace about themselves. They simply refuse to be swayed by the whims of others and are quietly effective at running their own lives. Now, this kind of thought and others that you get by reading and practicing the concepts of Dyer and of Eric Byrne and such books as Games People Play or Barksdale's Self-Esteem or Abraham Maslow or a host of others that deal with these frustrating and confusing elements of relationships is great. And yet, when you boil it all down and you look at it realistically, there is a more excellent way to this love relationship, and it cuts through the confusion and the multiplicity of exercises and gyrations. And it is the way that Jesus Christ taught. Oops, I heard a lot of minds turn off. I can almost hear, gee, I thought he was going to give me something I can really use. Instead, he's going to talk about Jesus. Jesus is great for spiritual salvation, but what I need is some gut-level help right down here in the trenches of life and my real relationships with real people. And I know that, friend, and I want you to hang on. Answer me the question. If there were a way to get spiritual salvation and at the same time get your whole life act together in such a way that you could go to bed every night happy, a non-victim, satisfied with your relationships, being in top shape, if you could find that way, you'd want to get out looking for it, wouldn't you? But you don't have to go anywhere. We're going to find it right here. You see, it was from Jesus that I learned the law of harmony. It is from Jesus that we learn about joyful relationships through his words and his demonstrations, which took place right down in the trenches of life and amidst the most troubling circumstances that you could dream up, much worse than anything you're dealing with. But in all of that, Jesus was never a victim. He was totally responsible, but never a victim. And he never made anybody else his victim. Even on the cross, he was in control. Can you imagine a victim being able to speak to God at such a moment and such pain, saying, "Forgive them, Father. They don't know what they do." My friend, Jesus practiced unrelenting giving of love to everyone in every situation. He was thus at peace within himself. He depended upon no one but God for response to his love. He was a joy-filled person who never felt alone. Recall with me the passage that's recorded in the book of John, the 15th chapter, the 9th through the 11th and the 16th and 17th verses, which record the essence of this teaching. Jesus speaks, and in so doing, he is giving his final lessons to his disciples. He says, "As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be full. You did not choose me, but I chose you, and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. This I command you, to love one another." Now, Jesus was speaking to a group of men who were never paid to follow him. He never condemned them in their weaknesses. He patiently dealt with their inability to grasp the truth that he spoke and demonstrated. He expected nothing from them. He merely loved them. And he infringed not one iota upon their freedom, not even the freedom of Judas to go and betray him. And his only command was that they love one another. Now the question is, why did he tell them to love one another? Because he said so? Because he thought it was a good idea and that they must do it in order to be his friend? No. He told them to love one another because it is the secret. It is the way that the heart can be full of the joy of the Christ, and the only way. Jesus said, "You did not choose me," meaning that he never tried to entice them to follow with hope of reward for obedience. He chose them that they might bear fruit, not that he would bear fruit through them, but that each one of them might observe, learn, and experience joy through the same kind of love giving to everyone in every situation that Jesus had practiced. And you realize, of course, that Jesus practiced love even to those who hated, reviled, and persecuted him. Now, Jesus was also talking to you and me. He says, the way to establish good relationships or to dissolve the loneliness of warped ones is through love, but not through reciprocated or reactive love. It is through our unrelenting, unreserved giving of ourselves. This is how we control our life. This is how we fill it with joy. This is how we make it fulfilled. And just so that you know that it works, I'm going to give you a little exercise. For the coming week, I hope it'll be for the coming weeks of your life. Now, even right now, you may not know that you have an independent source of love within yourself through God. So I want you to discover it. In what they call transactional analysis, there's a thing called a stroke. Now, usually, good relationships are valued in the number of positive strokes that you get. And a stroke can be any kind of a clue that you initiate to another person that tends to uplift their feeling of self-esteem, worthiness, of being loved. So, this week, what I want you to do is to initiate strokes to all with whom you come into contact. Now, I don't want you to do anything dramatic. I don't want you to go preaching on the street corner or anything like that. I just want you to do some little things. For example, I want you to smile at every stranger. For some of you, that's going to be tough to do. But simply smile at every stranger. If you get close enough to that stranger, say hello, but keep on wearing that smile. Now, if you're accustomed to saying hello to that person, then deliberately add a new stroke. stop and shake hands. Add to whatever it is you ordinarily do to persons or persons. Now, with your mate or with other family members, smile and hug them when they least expect it. Now, that's kind of a fun game. It really is. And you can go about doing that game and get a lot of joy out of watching what people do and watching their reactions to what it is you've done, watching the surprise on their face as you smile or say hello or shake hands. But that's not the object of this particular exercise. I want you to forget their response, their reaction. What I want you to do is to concentrate on how you feel in doing it. See how you feel when you smile at someone. See how you feel when you stop and say hello and shake another person's hand on the spur of the moment, quite unexpectedly. See how you feel. See how you feel when you hug some member of your family when they might otherwise have thought you would be angry or irritated or uptight with them. Instead, do the other thing and see how you feel doing it that way. Be in control. Don't give in to any negative kind of attitude or any kind of negative action. Make a positive action and check how you feel in the process of it. What's going to happen is you are going to begin to see that it is in the act of your own givingness, the giving of your unrelenting love to those even who are unlovely, who may be persecuting you, as a matter of fact. When you give them your love, your smile, your handshake, your support, when you do that, you experience love and joy, and your heart is filled with the joy of the Christ. You are on the way to enriching all of your poor relationships, and you're moving away from any loneliness that you may have ever felt. Well, my friends, the words have been spoken. We have passed between us the secrets of the ages, which bring into our lives peace, joy, love, wholeness, satisfaction, and self-esteem. And secrets which break the old negative tapes of failure, fear, guilt, and loneliness. And so it is that we end this time together with a sincere prayer, a prayer that never will cease as long as we live, the prayer that each of us will continue to live these lessons with grateful hearts to the one source of it all, God. And with grateful hearts to that greatest teacher and way shower, our wonderful companion and friend, Jesus Christ. Go, my friend, in joy, in peace, in love, succeeding in freedom for all of your life. Christ's name we pray. Amen.